So, yeah, I understand around 93, you were in a PhD program for sociology. You dropped out of that to become a full-time musician. So what made you decide to go down the road, the path of music 100%?
Oh, man, this is a corny story, and I'll try to make it quick. But I was up late one night watching PBS.
Okay.
And it was during one of their fun drives, and there was a guy in there, Les, I think it was Les McCann, or not Les McCann, something, Les Brown.
Yeah.
Les Brown, Yes You Can, was the name of his book.
I remember Les Brown.
Motivational speaker. Mm-hmm. And he said, during his thing, he said, hey, I want you to stop and think about that thing that you do that brings you the most joy when you're doing it. And when you're doing it, you can't think about anything else. The whole outside world just goes away, and you're totally in the moment. And whatever that thing is, that's what you need to go out and start doing right now for a living. And I make a joke, and I'll censor myself a little bit, but I'll say, when I realized I couldn't do that first thing that came to mind, the second thing was music. That's the joke I make often.
Okay.
Yeah. First thing would be, how fair is the heart or whatever. But I started almost immediately, as corny as it sounds, the next day I told my wife, hey, you know what? I think I want to be a professional musician full time. I've been in a couple of bands here and there while I was in college, but it never really went after it. And so within a few months, I was already booking gigs around the Lansing area, and within a few months after that, I was working 6 and 7 nights a week.
Okay.
I was taking it very seriously, and I was practicing 10 or 12 hours a day and working gigs.
Sure.
And at one point, it started damaging my hands.
Oh.
And had to back away from that, but I just went in full force, just purely out of the passion.
So sometimes you just need that extreme focus.
Right, I think so. I mean, I'm not going to act like I have this incredible, I have a work ethic, but it isn't, how do I say it? I really enjoy what I'm doing, so I don't really feel like I'm working. I guess that's a cliche that people throw out there often, but it's true. I don't think I could put the same amount of time and effort into other things that I do with music, and it's because I'm so passionate about it.
And it's great to see when that pays off.
Yeah, I feel like it drives me, and it ebbs and flows, and they've been doing it for a while, and there's been some dry and slow years. But I think it's that way with everything, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. No matter what business somebody's in, you betcha. But, I've caught you a few times live, and you can really tell you got a great passion.
I definitely am, and I'm also appreciative that I get to do it. How about that?
Yeah, I mean, that's not a bad deal.
Yeah, I almost sometimes am embarrassed that I get to do it. it's going really well. Now, when it's going not so well, I think I'm still paying my dues, and that's okay too. But there are times when it's going really well, and I feel so grateful that I'm almost embarrassed that I get to do what I love.
Now, you were with Root Doctor before going solo in 2009. What made you decide to strike out on your own?
I fronted my own band in the 90s.
Okay.
And I did that quite a bit, but I never made a record. And then after my daughter was born, this is 14, 15 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I kind of scaled way back on doing my own thing to the point of where I just stopped doing anything altogether for about 4 or 5 years and moved out of state, was gone, came back to Michigan about, 8 years ago? And met Jim Alfredson,
okay.
Was a keyboard player from Organissimo, and also was in Root Doctor at the time. And we had never met before then, but he had heard about what I had done in the 90s. And just so happened, Root Doctor was looking for a guitar player, and he cajoled me out of what I called my early retirement.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, because I was kind of like, I don't know. So basically, it was a wonderful, Root Doctor was a wonderful experience. It kicked me in the hind end. It got me back into it.
Sure.
But I kind of knew once I got into it and I started getting my chops back, I knew I was going to eventually do my own thing. So it's kind of where I needed to be. And then, of course, now Jim's off touring with Geneva Magnus, and Root Doctor's still doing great. So everything's working out for everybody. But I did three records with Root Doctor, and I worked as a co-producer on them. I wrote most of the songs, and then those on that band, I was the backup singer and of course guitar player, and I have wonderful memories of all of it. It really was a great time for me.
Now, both of your releases, Walk That Fine Line and Fell Toward None, have gotten a lot of positive attention. I know you've been number three on XM, BMA nominations. But what does it take these days for an independent band musician to go out there and get on folks' radars?
Tenacity. No, I don't know. A little lunacy. I mean, the reality of it is, you know, the playing field has been leveled quite a bit in the past few decades in terms of, you know, who can make a record.
Sure.
That's cool.
Yeah, I mean, I look over the landscape of the last 20, 30 years. I mean, it's just so many things that are available to you that weren't available to you then.
Right. And I think sometimes, you know, it certainly is the fact that we have more bands making records, and many of them are very good, and yet record sales are down. People are consuming music differently than they did, you know, 20, 30 years ago. I remember being a kid and hearing a song and really digging it and going to the local mall to buy the record, or better yet, going to the record store and just looking at album artwork as a partial determining factor as to whether I, you know, were to purchase it.
Sure.
And now it's pretty much streaming audio, you know, Pandora and Spotify and that sort of stuff. And artist royalties are really a sliver of what they used to be, in particular for independents.
Right.
And so it's really tough for people to make it like where they have a million seller. But because you can do it yourself, and because you can now make a record for under 10 grand, versus half a million,
right,
or more, or 2 million. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's some crazy budgets. You don't have to sell as many copies. So, I mean, a band can go out and sell a couple thousand copies, and if their business model is set up properly, they've done pretty well with it.
But you're making more on it because you don't have these big record companies involved.
Right, exactly. Yeah, right, exactly. You're not paying all these other people. And you know, I've had several friends on major labels, and the stories they have told me are just horrifying.
Oh, yeah.
You know, about, oh, wow, I got a $2 million deal with Atlantic Records. Oh, that's cool. How much of that do you actually get? Oh, none of it.
Yeah. I mean, people think just because somebody's got a deal with a major label that their life is made, and it's just simply not the case.
No, I mean, I think part of it is, you know, in order for somebody to be successful in the music business, not that I'm that successful, but and this falls under, if I followed half my advice, I'd be twice as successful category. But if people realize that they need to create their own scene, that really, you know, breaking into a scene isn't what it used to be. It isn't
right.
Like there's just these people just waiting, holding money in their hands, waiting for the next cool thing.
Right.
Yeah, there's some of that, but it isn't quite as substantial as it used to be. Now what it is you just have to kind of do hard work. It's almost like running. I hate to say it, and it cheapens it somehow, but it's almost like running for political office. You got to get out there and canvass, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you don't like that analogy, you know, it's just simply like being a door-to-door salesman. I mean, and music has always been that way.
Sure.
It's just that people aren't as eager to consume as they used to be, or when they do consume, they don't actually spend any money.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, because of the internet model. And then, of course, you've got social media, which I think is certainly helpful to musicians to, you know, connect with their fans at perhaps a deeper level.
Right, you know, and even that, you know, there was an interesting blog at Berklee College of Music with John Mayer. And he talks a bit about how it, you can get too wrapped up in the social media, and it can take you away from what's really important, and that is the art and making the music, that it can become a distraction, and that it is tending not to be as effective as people are hoping it will be. You know, that all started with MySpace. People thought, well, if I could just, you know, get a lot of people to listen to my music, the record labels will discover me.
Right.
Nah, pretty much the record labels look at Billboard.
Right.
And by the time you get on Billboard, you've done so much more than have a simple MySpace or a or a Twitter or a Facebook that it's not even funny.
Sure.
Now, am I saying that these things aren't important at all? Yeah, well, I mean, they can't hurt.
Right.
But they're not going to make you in and of themselves. And I don't think they necessarily break people when they don't do it either. There's some people who have managed to etch out a considerable living in the world of music without paying much attention, if any,
right,
to the Facebook and that stuff. So
sure. Yeah, I mean,
not to sound negative about it. I mean, you know me, I'm on Facebook.
Right. No, I think that's how we first came to know of each other, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think that social media can certainly cut both ways, but you hope that, you know, folks that you're engaged with online are going to come out to your show and hopefully buy your music and support you in that way.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, too, is just, you know, the more unique your product becomes, the more you come to realize that you have to get out in ever-expanding concentric circles of exposure. So
mm-hmm.
Let's say you start in Grand Rapids and you book a couple of shows and you spend 90% of the effort really should be at that point of putting the word out there to anybody who may be remotely interested in doing whatever you have to do to get them in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I should say, I don't know about percentage here, you also should have a great show. but then from that, you just have to understand that, okay, well, maybe I can't come back and do this for another 6 months to a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now what am I going to do in the next 6 months or year? Well, you got to go do the same thing in another city, and you have to socially network. And there are people who are far better at this than I am, and I see some bands who are incredibly successful at drumming up street teams, people, you know, in each local community who will go out and ring the bell for them, as it were.